Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Hi folks, welcome to episode 64 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I am, of course, joined by Bo, and we are going to be talking about King Canute, the mighty emperor of the North Sea, and the man who tried to hold back the tides, as we're apocryphally told. It's an obvious BS story. The man was clearly too smart to think of doing that. There's no way.
Okay.
Oh come on. Obvious BS story, right?
Well, I don't know.
I think it is.
I don't know. I think there's a couple of different ways of reading that particular story. We'll get to it, because it's probably the most famous anecdote about him, isn't it? There's a couple of different ways of reading it, but it's from Henry of Huntingdon, who is a few hundred years later, so it could easily be completely apocryphal. But I suspect there's something there.
I suspect it's in the way it's being told, right? Because there are some ways of telling the story that are trying to make him seem like a fool. And other ways, where he's trying to impart a lesson. Mm. And maybe the lesson ones are more accurate than the fool ones, because he obviously wasn't a fool.
Yeah, so no, he's wise.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
The most of the accounts, most of the chronicles and things, the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, surprisingly, considering he was king for 20 years plus, and they don't speak all that much about him. And the Scandinavian chroniclers and poets don't speak a massive amount about him, considering how important he was.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that story about the waves is a funny one. It can be taken both ways.
Mm.
Because the original, I was actually reread the original lines from Henry of Huntingdon, and it isn't actually clear exactly what he meant by it. But
right, okay.
I think it is that he was showing that he's just a man.
Right.
Not that he thought he could actually stop the waves.
Right. Because there are multiple ways of reading it.
Yeah. But thinking you could actually command the waves to stop is sort of beyond childish, isn't it? It would be sort of completely insane.
Yeah.
And he's definitely not that, so...
He seems very salient, very lucid, capable of actually governing and, you know, conquering and ruling. And like you say, he did it for 20 years, so it's not like he was an amateur.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't disconnected from reality. So anyway, we'll get to all this.
The chronicles and the later historians say that he had like a completely able government. Like his government and him was able and even wise. So
wonderful.
That story of the waves must, I think.
Yeah. Be written by salty people.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So should we just start?
Yeah. So we left off from Ethelred.
Yeah. Okay, so Ethelred, as we said in the one on Ethelred, it wasn't the exact previous one, that he gets ousted by Sven Forkbeard, but then Sven Forkbeard, within weeks of winning and getting himself crowned at Winchester, dies of natural causes, and Ethelred comes back, and Edric the Grabber come back. But it's not for all that long, it's like, a year or two, and then... Ethelred the Unready himself dies of natural causes in London.
Yeah.
And he's quite old. He'd ruled for like 40 years, 38 odd.
Yeah.
Anyway, a long time. Yeah. Long, long, long time. You know when reigns are so long that that whole you generation can't wait for them or to more. Die. Or but you sort of cast your shadow over a whole generation or more. And so by the time Ethelred the Unready does die, already his eldest, most powerful son, Edmund Ironside, is already in the field doing things.
Well, he's a grown man and has been for a decade or whatever,
So already Edmund Ironside is, there's no succession crisis in that sense. It definitely goes to him.
Which is very useful, I suppose. Yeah. Right. But
so I guess we'll have to pick up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because this is where Canute sort of first comes in. Yeah. One thing I'll say just before we sort of really get into the details of it all, just a tiny bit of an overview, is that I think Canute is, I think it's fair to say, he's sort of the ultimate Viking in a way. Because he sort of realises all their dreams of grandeur to to conquer England entirely and become kings of England. He actually does it. He actually realises all of that, and nobody repeats the feat after him or anything.
Unlike Harald Hardrada.
Many still try after him, but no one does it. So just in the sense of if the Vikings, their ultimate goal was to conquer these islands, well, he's sort of the main one. He's sort of the pinnacle. And yet, having said all that, some hardline Viking fans might argue that he's sort of barely a Viking. He's certainly Scandinavian. He's very strongly in the Scandinavian mould in all sorts of ways. But he's Christian. Okay, so right there, a few hardliners
would
say...
Christian Viking?
Yeah, right. And all sorts of other things. He chose to make his court in England and to spend nearly all his life, adult life, in England. Just sort of farmed out the Scandinavian kingdoms. I mean, that, putting a rosy tint on that, but still. Chose to take sort of a Norman English wife, well, the widow of Ethelred the Unready. All sorts of things. So he is certainly a Dane. He's certainly Scandinavian in
but
all sorts of ways.
But he's got a bit native.
But he's not that classic Viking type.
Well, he seems like a sort of... not quite like Alcibiades, like where he's the chameleon, wherever he is, but like, you know, when the Spartan governors go and rule other Greek cities and they go completely off the rails, they're no longer like the Spartans. And so the Spartans at home are like, what are you doing? Why are you dressing in this gaudy Persian dress? Why are you eating and drinking like this? Why are you doing all of this? And it's like, and that, you can imagine that the Vikings were like, Canute, why are you acting like a Christian and going and living in England? What are you doing? You know?
Yeah, he's God native.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah, you can imagine that the hardline Danes or all Scandinavian peoples would be a bit put off by that. You're supposed to be one of us first and foremost.
When Alexander's flaunting all the Persian dress, and the Macedonians are like, "What are you doing? Setting up my court in Babylon?" It's like, "Are you? Sorry, what's going on here, man?"
That's sort of probably one of the key themes, or one of the main themes, is that tightrope he's got to walk. It's not an easy thing to do, you know.
Because at points in his life, he's the king of Denmark, England, and Norway simultaneously, isn't he? So it's so they call it like the North Sea Empire. So he's the problem with this is the locus, the sort of center of his empire, is in the middle of the North Sea. So, like, okay, how are you governing this, mate? It's a bit of an untenable prospect.
Yeah, and we'll get into it a bit later, probably almost certainly, about his navy, like not really having a full permanent standing navy, but, well, having a very small one, sort of 40 ships, and when you need to, building more, which is slow, you know, and so, yeah, this idea that of his sort of permanent navy or not, and, yeah, having a maritime empire, because that's really what it is, isn't it, a bit of a maritime empire. And it puts him on a par, almost, with the Holy Roman Emperor. Well, we'll get into all that. It's literally standing shoulder to shoulder with him. Marries one of his daughters to one of the Holy Roman Emperors.
Wow, okay.
Was invited and attended his coronation. Okay, we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Okay, so when Sven Forkbeard first comes over, Canute come in like, when he first comes over in like 1003, 1005 sorts of times. Mm-hmm. Apparently Canute came with him, but he was a boy.
Yeah.
Who'd been a really small boy, so 10, maybe 15 years old, something like that. So it does seem that he was exposed to England or the West Saxon kingdoms from the earliest age. So it wasn't that he, you know, you could say that Alexander is truly an alien to Persepolis. He's definitely a foreigner, an outsider. Whereas Canute's not quite that. Again, later in the middle of his reign, or whatever, when he starts taking the crown, lots of people sort of are happy to accept him. Maybe not happy, but they're okay to accept him because he's very much an anglicised Dane.
He's very much an Anglophile as well, right? He seems to actually like England and seems to want to spend his time here, which is like, okay, well, you know, you've got this competent Dane who likes the place, so you've got Ethelred the Unready, who's terrible. You know, you can see how after that long, useless reign, a welcome, you know, a competent administration that's vaguely friendly towards the place might be preferable.
Right, yeah. And plus, I think the central and southern England is just more pleasant than Scandinavia.
Well, yeah, there is that.
it's richer and more pleasant. Hmm. So, yeah, if you could choose.
Better weather.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you could choose, if there wasn't a political reason why you had to stay in Norway, but we'll get into all the various kingdoms because it sort of ebbs and flows. One other thing I would say, just sort of a grand overview to sort of bear in mind, perhaps all throughout this, is that this North Sea Empire doesn't last after his death. So it's a bit like the even more fractious and weak than the Angevin Empire of Henry II and. Richard the Lionheart. It really relied on him personally.
Yeah, well, I was going to say it's clearly the consequence of his personal, like, not just magnetism but ability on the field. You know, his military prowess. Mm. And if you aren't someone of equal military stature and bearing, then of course you're not going to keep this together.
Yeah, yeah, and it does say when people, various rulers. Again, like Alexander, the moment he died, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty much, like the moment he died, all his lieutenants and captains, it all breaks up and they start fighting each other. But, but then that does say that, as weak as that is, it does speak volumes about you as the person while you lived, like Alexander, doesn't it? It says that, only certain people, only certain characters are able to do it. And it's kind of rare, even though there's loads of examples in history. That's because they're the ones that succeeded, so they're the ones that come down to us. But most people, I think, that are walking around alive wouldn't have the character traits necessary to do that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But it does seem that Canute did one way or another, yeah. And he doesn't seem to have been sort of extremely... violent or anything, sort of personally violent, because some of these people, their authority, should we say, comes quite literally at the point of a sword.
Yeah.
Especially Vikings sometimes, just the threat that they'll club your head in.
Yeah.
In real time, if you do anything against their will.
But Canute...
He's not that.
Canute has legitimacy, though, right?
Yeah.
He's the son of Svein, and so... Yeah, it's fine being the king of Denmark. So, okay, well, you know, I'm the rightful inheritor of this kingdom. I've won another kingdom through force of arms. I can't even remember how he becomes the king of Norway. But, you know, the point is he's got, you know, actual lineal legitimacy. So he doesn't need to be, you know, constantly torturing people.
Yeah, yeah. So Sven Forkbeard was just, you know, completely undisputed, the king. His father was Harald Bluetooth. So Canute's his father and grandfather.
Yeah, he's got a good, solid lineage here.
And Canute's, when Forkbeard dies, it just seems there's no doubt that it's going to be Canute. But he has got a brother, Harald, who is left on the throne of Denmark. Mm. And then about 2 years later, he dies of natural causes. And apparently just everyone just hails Canute.
What are we going to do? Where are our options here, you know?
Yeah. So they just hail, so it sort of falls into his lap. And it's not, you know, I've made it sound so easy there. There's more to it, way more to it. In fact, you could do epochs just about sort of the Scandinavian situation, which we're not actually going to concentrate on too much in this.
But maybe we'll come back to it.
Yeah.
Because it sounds interesting.
Because there's loads there. Yeah. And then, so just give a super quick overview on that then. So he's king of Denmark and England at that point. Then later, much later, like in the, it was a big battle of Nezjar in 1216, but it's more like in the late, 1016. It's more like in the 1020s, late 1020s, about 1028 odd. There's more battles and things in Norway, and he becomes sort of full king of Norway and Denmark and England. And then right at the end of his life, literally like the year he dies or the year before he dies or something, or just a few months before he dies, his armies are successful, relatively successful in Sweden. He doesn't sort of conquer Sweden or anything, but he has de jure power, some sort of hegemony over Sweden.
Yeah.
But actually, no, also, it is complicated in the Scandinavian story. It's complicated. There's loads of characters in it, which we won't really mention here. But also, right near the end of his life, he loses big chunks of Norway as well. So anyway, it ebbs and flows. At one point, in fact, he writes a letter. There's a few famous, but there's a few surviving letters written by Canute that have survived. And anyway, in one or two of them, he gives his titles. And he says, I can't find it, but he literally says, King of England, Denmark, Norway, and some of Sweden, is what he says.
Yeah.
So it's sort of quaint, isn't it? It's not quite like
what I like about it is the honesty. Assyrian.
Right.
Yeah, is the honesty. Well, some of Sweden.
Yeah.
You know, not all of Sweden. I didn't say all of Sweden, just some of Sweden. You know, whereas, like you say, the Assyrians would have claimed four quarters of the earth, you know.
It's just, fairly quaint, isn't it?
It's
kind of nice.
I like how tempered it is, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get back into the chronology. So,
yes.
So the big year, sort of 12, 10, I keep saying 12, 10, 13, 14 time, when Sweyn Fulkbeard comes back for the second time, because there was a little bit of a famine before that, and he went back to Scandinavia briefly, but comes back basically for the second time. And that's when, you know, everything, he really, like, you know, Ethelred has to flee over to Norway and Normandy. And Sweyn Fulkbeard becomes the full king of England. So he's the first Viking to achieve that. And now at that point, Canute's with him again. A young man, but at least a fully grown man, but very young. We don't know exactly. He's one of those guys. We don't know the exact date, a year he was born. But anyway, he marries an Anglo-Saxon woman, an Elfgifu of Northampton. Yeah.
Okay.
So he marries her, and over the next couple of years has a couple of children with her. And, you know, they go on to become important, those children. A Sweyn and a Harold. Well, it's Harold Harefoot.
Oh, right. That's
one of their their issue.
Yeah.
Goes on to be Harold Harefoot. So he marries her quite young, you see. So he's still like, we don't quite know exactly, but he's probably about 20 odd, maybe even younger. So quite young, really. And then, so he's like the son. So it's really important. He's like he's not an Aetheling because he's not Anglo-Saxon, but he's like the prince.
Yeah.
He's like,
he's an important guy.
Yeah. Super important. Right. But when Fulkbeard sort of kind of out of nowhere pops his clogs, there's, you know, everyone in the realm, all the chips are thrown high again. We don't know. It's not just a complete shoo-in that the 20-odd-year-old Canute, he's just going to inherit everything. Not at all. There's loads and loads of power bases all around. It's a complicated picture at that point. And as we mentioned in the last one, so I won't do this in too much detail, the great barons, for want of a better word, the great magnates of England.
Aren't they the earls?
Yeah, aldermen. Yeah, sort of the great aldermen. They would prefer to bring Ethelred back rather than give it
no
to Sweyn's son. Yeah.
He annoys me.
Yeah.
Just absolutely annoys me.
Yeah.
Just as an Englishman, I'm annoyed by Ethelred. I'd rather the competent Dane than the slavish, you know, craven Ethelred.
Yeah. And I think we mentioned it in the last one as well, that one of the main provisos was don't be as weak as you were before and give all the power of government to the worst people.
Yeah.
And he says, sure, but then just does. Yeah.
At least he's going to die.
Yeah, quite quickly. Yeah. At that point, once he does die, again, all the chips are thrown high again.
Mm.
So you would think, oh, well, this Edmund Ironside, it should just sort of undisputedly go to him. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't, because he's quite young as well. He's really fairly, even though he seems to be very strong. I mean, even the epithet Ironside.
It's a great name.
It just says that you're...
you're a great warrior.
Competent in battle.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a great name. You know, Edmund Ironside versus Canute the Great.
Yeah.
So this is epic.
Yeah, two young, ambitious, capable kings.
Yeah, why isn't there a movie about this?
Yeah, yeah. The wokists would probably like to as well, because the legit Englishman gets beat. So they'd probably like to do that, wouldn't they?
He doesn't get, like, crushed, though, does he?
No.
It's a pretty close-run thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they have... It's disputed a bit because it's not that well known, but they have between 5 and 6 battles and he wins all but the last one.
Really?
Yeah. You know how that goes, like Pompey. Yeah, you can win, and then you lose, and when that's the end of the story, you lost. So you lost. You only need to lose once.
Yeah.
Sometimes. It's one of those stories. when Ethelred the Unready does die again of natural causes in London, it seems that where the barons and the magnates had brought him back a couple of years earlier, it seems that that must have been sort of shaky, or that wasn't unanimous.
Mm.
Because when he dies, big chunks of the north certainly are like, let's bring back, our Danish overlord. Like this Canute is going to be better than Edmund Ironside. We don't. Right. So it's a complicated picture, and we're not actually that sure, because the accounts, again, for some reason, the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle doesn't give us tons and tons of details about Canute.
Hmm.
Some modern scholars have suggested that just in the most general sense, they were a little bit embarrassed, because he's Christianized and anglicized in some ways. He's fully a Dane. He speaks Danish.
Yeah.
His mum was a Polish princess.
Right. So he's a foreigner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they think that maybe the chronicle was just ever so slightly embarrassed. So where you would expect more information, it's just not there. Because
we'd like
the 11th
to talk about Canute,
now.
But Canute's cringe.
So. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah. They considered him cringe. Yeah.
But they come for pages about Edmund Ironside, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and it's really, really sad that he doesn't ultimately win.
I mean, it is, I guess, but
the north of England, Northumbria and everything, has always been the five boroughs. They've always, well, not always, of course, but for centuries, they've been sort of Danish held, or at least sympathetic. More sympathetic to them than to the seat in Wessex or London. Canute comes over. But what he does is, it seems he's, and this is when he sort of explodes onto the stage of history in a way. Mm. Apparently, before this point, there's very little written about him, even in Scandinavia. Like, his childhood is one of those people where there's basically nothing about his childhood. Basically nothing.
He wasn't important.
Yeah.
Didn't do anything.
Right, yeah. Well, children aren't that important until you start acting, right? And so when he comes over, you might think, oh, well, we'll land in York or something, fight downwards. No, he lands on the south coast, somewhere in and around, on the south coast, like Portsmouth somewhere, and heads straight for sort of the heartland of Wessex.
Aggressive. So I take it he's landed with an army then. So it's a good sized army, right?
Yeah. Right. Full army. And apparently Ironside is in London or in the southeast, and hasn't quite got the men or the logistics in place to just march straight, make a beeline straight for him out in the West Country and have a big battle right away. He's not in that position, unfortunately. So Canute gets to basically burn and harry all around the southwest. and Wessex, the heartlands of Wessex.
Literally where we are now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Places like Wiltshire, yeah. Yeah.
Canute Burns, Wiltshire.
And, well, Winchester and Gloucester are sort of the big, yeah, big places. There's a big bishopric in Gloucester. And then he harries more up towards the north, up towards the Humber and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and finally, after, so sort of leaving the southeast to Edmund Ironside for the time being, and he conquers most of the west and the north, and then comes down to meet, to start meeting Edmund in sort of open battles, which is what happens, you know? So it's sort of in the year, it was, this is all in the years, sort of 1015, 1016. So like 1016 is the big one, the big year. So as I mentioned, there were quite a few battles. There's a one in a place called Pencilwood in Somerset, seems to be a big one, but they seem to be not all that decisive. So that's the thing with battles, isn't it? Sometimes they're very, very decisive, but often not, quite often not, especially in the pre-modern days.
When it's easy to run away.
Yeah. And so you might win the field, you might win the day, you might push the enemy off the field and they effectively flee over the horizon.
But you've only killed 5% of the enemy men.
Yeah. So you won the battle.
Yeah.
But you haven't really won anything, really.
Yeah.
sort of the levels of your danger are still as much as they ever were. There's still an army out there that wants your blood.
Because the thing is, well, like, so these armies, just for anyone who's curious, they'll be almost entirely infantry. And they'll be heavily armed. They'll have big shields, they'll have swords and spears, throwing axes or something like that. You know, helmets, mail coats for the elite men. And it's quite hard to kill those people, actually. It's actually really difficult to kill them. And they'll have a very, very small amount of cavalry, if used at all. So when they run away, well, now you've got to run a mile or two that way. And that's assuming they don't, like, get into the woods or something and get, you know, and then as well, and then another thing is you have to always be careful of things like feigned retreats and traps and ambuscades. So, okay, they're running away. Okay, well, are we going to chase them? Well, it might be a trap. You know, we could just, you know, break ranks and all, you know, chase them down and hopefully we'll get them. But also there might be like, a, you know, 1,000 men sat in a bush over there who'll come out and slaughter us all. So, you know, it's just not that easy. It's just not that easy to know these things. Yeah. And so a prudent commander won't necessarily, if it's not certain that that's not going to be the case, and they won't, you know, commit to the flight. And so, yeah, there's, especially as they're not going to have the horsemen to run them down. So, yeah, it's quite plausible, basically, to have a big set piece battle, be pushed off, and then just come back later with almost as many men.
Yeah, well, that's it. Absolutely. And that seems to be what happens here. Canute Ironside sort of bests Canute a bit, like 4 or 5 different times.
Yeah. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah. And
because it's not like Canute's men aren't going to be good soldiers.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. And I mean, so Ironside's base of operations seems to be the southeast and London. And Canute tries to besiege London and isn't able to. So it seems London Burr seems to remain just completely loyal to Edmund Ironside. So they even come to an agreement at one point. Oh, well, before that is the big battle. So as I mentioned, they had 4, 5, or 6 different battles, but eventually the issue is forced out at Assenden, the Battle of Assenden. They think maybe that's at the at a modern place called Ashington in Kent. Either way, it seems to be to the east of London, north of the Thames, in Essex somewhere. Sorry, in Essex somewhere. The Battle of Assenden. So that's a big one. That's a giant thing. You know, 1016, the big year. I mean, that's up there quite easily. You can argue it's up there with 1066, the Battle of Hastings. You know?
It's about the decision on who's going to rule England.
Yeah.
So it's a massive thing.
I would say it's more important than Maldon and less important than Hastings, but very close. I mean, very close. Well, so in that battle, Canute wins, sort of quite decisively. Mm. Not 100% decisively, because that's the other thing about the Battle of Hastings. Massively decisive.
Yeah.
It couldn't have been more decisive.
Well, he killed the king and all of the nobles that were with him. So that was a massive win.
And it seems Essendon, not quite that, but nearly.
Right, right.
Very nearly. In fact, I've got a quote from William of Malmesbury, again, a chronicler from a couple of hundred odd years, 150 odd years later. William of Malmesbury was supposed to have said, on that field, Canute destroyed a kingdom. There, the whole flower of our country withered.
Sounds quite bad.
Yeah, yeah. Because Edmund Ironside isn't killed, but he is wounded.
Mm.
Well, we're not sure. A lot of these details, we're not sure. But it looks like, we think, he was almost certainly wounded.
Mm.
And he died a couple of weeks later, or a few weeks later.
Right, right.
And again, we don't know, but most historians seem to think it was from wounds in that battle. But anyway, immediately, or almost immediately after that battle, they have a parley and sort of agree, some sort of agreement to...
divide the kingdom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's sort of...
Yeah.
It's frustrating, but it's sort of almost along the same lines that were in the age of Alfred the Great and Athelstan,
really?
Like a diagonal line across Britain with most of the north, northeast and Midlands, big chunks of the Midlands controlled by them and big chunks of the south and west controlled by us, if you like. So it's like hundreds and hundreds of years and we're almost back to square one.
But that's very interesting, isn't it? Because if Edmund hadn't died of his wounds... The implication here is that, it was a defeat, but it wasn't a crushing defeat. And Canute felt like he wasn't strong enough to merely press the issue, right?
Right.
You wouldn't bother coming to terms with a defeated enemy. You'd be like, you're dead. You know, you don't have a force in the field. I'll do as I please. Yeah. And so if Canute feels that he's like, okay, well, I'll negotiate for half the kingdom, you know, rebuild my strength and then take the rest later or whatever, that means that Edmund's position is not terrible or, you know, insurmountably bad. You know, he's obviously okay, you've lost one battle and maybe you've lost, you know, a thousand men or something. That's terrible. But Canute's clearly not taken it all, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, well, you're absolutely right. It speaks volumes because why would you have any sort of...
Yeah, you wouldn't treat with a defeated enemy.
Yeah, right. But, okay, so maybe to put a bit more colour on that, when Edmund Ironside does die, there's no more big battles, though.
Mm.
There's no sort of, like, the colonel of his support still fight on. No, once he dies, it seems like it's the end of it.
Well, who's...
to some degree.
Who's going to be picking up the baton for him, you know?
Well, that's the thing. There's actually quite a lot of people. So Ethelred the Unready had loads of sons.
Mm.
Loads, like a stupid amount. I think he had, like... six or eight sons before Emma of Normandy. And she gives him a couple of sons because she gives him an Edward and an Alfred.
How is it with this many sons? He couldn't...
It's funny because after Edmund Ironside, it's not like... Well, actually, I've given a bit of a bad impression here, a wrong impression. It wasn't just completely over once Edmund Ironside died, but... if we're only going to be able to spend a few minutes, years have to tick by here fairly quickly. Essentially, Canute's position is strong. But there are, in fact, other sons. And in fact, that Edward is, if we read the Unready's very young son at this point by Emma of Normandy, is Edward the Confessor.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Right, okay, yeah.
And he's got a younger brother, Alfred, as well. But they're just packed off and raised in Normandy. He spends almost his entire childhood and formative years in the Norman court, Edward the Confessor.
It's very interesting.
I think of Edward the Confessor as more Norman than anything else.
Well, I can see why.
Yeah, in lots of different
ways.
He's
raised by the Normans.
Yeah, his mum
He's going to be French-speaking. His mum was Norman. Like, how is he English?
I mean, his father was there for Red the Unready, but yeah. I mean, he's much more Norman than anything else.
My father was the worst king of England. Oh, brilliant.
So the idea that Edward the Confessor would possibly promise the throne to the Duke of Normandy isn't mental at all.
No, not at all.
A stretch at all, actually.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right Rug.